Oh, it feels good to be back.
We're back.
We are back. Oh, Peyton, your voice has changed.
Oh my gosh.
Now I'm here.
He's over there.
Peyton, I didn't even know you were in the studio today, to be quite honest.
And I've been quiet. I mean, it's one of the interesting storytellers that we had in here today on an
Have you
interview. It was
noticed the
pretty.
pattern? Meg, do you know the pattern?
That we have a talker and then a not a talker.
No. This goes beneath that pattern.
Oh, okay.
Peyton is very quiet when there's someone, when there's a stranger in the room.
Oh, he gets shy.
So most of our interviews, audience, happen via Zoom.
Yes.
So they're on this big screen in here, and we watch, and we gather our questions and things sometimes while they're talking. And you can't do that when the human, when the vessel
Yeah.
is sitting in the room. And Peyton, do you get nervous? I want to talk about this.
Honestly, yeah, kind of, especially somebody I've never either talked to before. When we get them on here on the
Yeah.
podcast and we talk to them, I guess you have a little bit back. You both have a little backstory, like you all know him. So kind
I
of
do
get.
like Finney. I have only ever taken one class with Finney, and it was
Spoiler
my.
alert.
Well,
Dr.
can I?
Finney's episode. Sorry.
Oh, it is Dr. Finney's episode. We have Dr. Finney on. But I took one class with him, and it was my study abroad class. And
Yeah.
I kind of during the semester, because it's like a you take a class during the semester and then you go for 10 days. We went to Cuba,
Yeah, you did.
which I had to get Finney to help me convince my mom to let me go to Cuba.
Yeah.
And I went, and it was, like he said, very life-changing for
Yeah.
all of the students there, I think. I think for me, it was my second time ever on a plane, first time ever out of the country.
Yeah.
Never had I ever done anything like that. I've barely been off the East Coast, like very much so. Like he said, my favorite phrase that he said the whole time we were there was fish out of water,
Yeah.
because I called it like low key, like zoo animal. Like we were like, we when we walked around, it was like we were
That you were the
being,
zoo animal?
yes, like we were
Okay.
being observed the
I
whole
didn't know if
time we
it
were
was like
there.
a little Madagascar moment where the
Not
zoo
the
animals escaped.
just to allude to something, it felt very much so like everybody could tell
That you were a tourist.
who we were and where specifically we were from.
Yeah.
And I don't know if everybody was happy about that, but
It's the reality
yeah.
of not being in your space. But yeah, we know we've touched on Cuba a lot of episodes because it's been a big part of Meg's life, and then we've talked about your jolly good time in
Jolly good
England.
time. Yeah, but see,
And
I think.
Ryan is studying abroad.
Where are you going?
TBD. I can't announce it yet because it's not official. But
Are you excited though?
heck yeah, I am.
Thank
How could you not be? We have a fatality that I'd like to
God.
announce. While Meg was talking, Peyton was so interested that he was playing with his bracelet and it snapped in half and fell on the floor.
He would rather do anything else other than listen to me talk that he was just sitting there playing with his bracelet.
Guys, listen, if you're listening to this podcast, Meg gives me a hard time all the time, but I just thought of this right at this second. Meg has not said a word about this past Saturday, which I'm very happy about.
What are
What
you
are you
getting
talking
at
about?
here, Peyton?
Well, there's football on Saturdays.
Oh,
Oh, I
you
think
mean
there was a
that
little.
I woke up from a nap and Tennessee was beating Alabama at halftime, and then I was very sad about it, and then I got on the phone with my mom and my brother. They put me on speaker, and my brother was not happy in the slightest. And then it's like, as soon as I woke up, we decided to be good at football again.
Meg, you have to be awake.
I know. I don't know how I
Because
slept.
Alabama won, correct?
Oh, yes. As
Oh.
soon as I woke up, we decided we were good at football again, and we beat Tennessee by what, two touchdowns?
Yeah. They
Yeah.
came back. They put up like 28 points in the second half.
We didn't score once in the first half. Once. And then we put up
You know, I think
24
there
points.
is enough division in this world. And for
And
you
we
two,
talked about it as well on this podcast.
my two esteemed
I like being over here that it feels
colleagues.
like me and you are having a conversation about Peyton,
Yeah, well,
instead of you
I
two
think
having a
kind of
conversation
we
about
I think
me.
we kind of are.
Yes, but I like this. I like being at the mic.
Yeah, it can be a power trip sometimes, not gonna lie. So I don't even know who I am, you know, get behind this thing.
Later. I still don't, Ryan.
Do we need to unpack that?
Oh,
He said
goodness.
no.
No, too much for that,
Too much for that.
Too much for
Well,
that.
Peyton, I feel like every time we do this, you're always on the other side of the room with the microphone, and you always talk about the weather, and you haven't done that yet. So can you give us a weather report?
Yeah, how is it today?
All right, guys, the weather outside is looking very nice. That was a little loud there, Ryan. You think so myself.
Well, here's the thing, Peyton. You have been like 3 feet away from the microphone. So I've been like having to jack your levels. And then you get up so close to it that I was attempting to pull it down. So continue with the weather report. I will mangle the audio.
The weather report today at Emory and Henry College is a nice little 70 degrees, but it's going to get very low tonight as we're going to be into about the 42 degrees. So it's very changing. The weather's changing still. So if you get sick, then it's probably due to the weather changing from 36 degrees for the low going up to about 72 for the high. So, yeah, hopefully that'll hurry and fix and change here soon, because here in about 3 weeks, we'll be going on Christmas break.
That's science and weather.
Ain't that insane?
That's crazy, man.
Isn't that absurd?
Are you staying over winter break? You all going home?
I'll go home for a little bit, but I'm going to try to enjoy where I'm staying, enjoy being here until I graduate. Because, I mean, I've only got one semester left. And I actually, okay, I know we continuously talk. So one of my suite mates, Ethan, came out of, I guess, their advising meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And the advisor was like, yeah, looks like you just have to take one more online class, and then you're out of here. And then we got the truck together, and we were driving to this guitar shop store, and he was talking. He's like, man, can you really believe, like, it's, like, about to be over? And then that kind of hit me really hard in the truck, and I didn't really say a word for, like, 10 minutes. So it really bothered me, you know. So, and then I'm like, well, you know, I'm not at that point yet, but, you know, after I get back from Christmas break, you know, I'll be like, well, it's hitting, like, hey, you know, like, guys.
Me and Ryan, thankfully, are not there yet.
Adios.
I'll probably...
The clock is about to strike, though, Meg.
Mm-mm.
For I know who the bell tolls.
Like I said, after spring semester, I still have 30 credits left to take. So I have to take
Meg, full take course media load. Law with me, please.
I'll think about it.
Okay.
Dr. Finney, every time he sees me, tells me to take media classes and tells me that I need to add a minor or a major. And I never do it, but I could be convinced, I think.
Yeah.
Are you trying to eat my gummy bears?
No.
You have your own bag.
I didn't know that, actually.
Well,
in my own little world.
Well, people, we've got a big episode to get into.
Big episode.
We've been talking about Dr. Finney, so let's let him talk. Meg, this is our episode with...
Hey.
Mark Finney.
Welcome to Studio B, the Emory and Henry College Bonner Scholar podcast. Join Ryan and Peyton as they discuss themes of place, community, and common ground.
This is Studio B.
Welcome to Studio B, Dr. Finney.
Hey.
Hey. Thanks for sitting down with us. For those who are here, this is an in-person interview, which we don't get to do a lot of, which is very exciting. This is our third one. Yeah, we had Jet, and then we had Diane, and now we have Dr. Finney. Third time's the charm, right, Peyton?
I think so. Which one do you like better? Do you like it on Zoom, or do you like it just in person? I feel like in person is more personal, so I like that a little bit more. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're in here, you know, you kind of get a gist, you kind of get expressions rather than we do if we're on Zoom. So
I think in this case, we know Dr. Finney, so I'm more comfortable with being locked in this tiny room with him.
I'm just over here taking a picture of the two of you guys sharing a microphone.
Yeah, please send that.
Pretty intimate today.
Please send that to Brent Treach.
Will do.
Passion the third mic, but Dr. Finney, we're stoked to have you on. Can you give us a little bit of your background and sort of like a recap of your career and what brought you to Emory and Henry?
Sure. Okay. I grew up in Roanoke. My folks still live in Roanoke. Cool. I went to Mary Washington College for my undergrad, which is in Fredericksburg, and no longer exists. It's now the University of Mary Washington. Really? I've been to three academic programs, none of which still exist in the way that they were when I was there. So Mary Washington is now University of Mary Washington. I then went, you know what? Let me do it this way.
Yeah.
When I was 15, I took a study abroad trip to Hungary and Czechoslovakia. And while I was there, I was walking in the park. I got a girlfriend, 15-year-old Finney with a girlfriend.
As you do.
And we're walking in a park, and there's this family walking towards us. And it's a dad and a little boy and a little girl. no, little girl, little boy, mom. They're like holding hands. And my girlfriend and I like part to go around them. And I'm going around the dad and he starts yelling at me in Hungarian, which I don't understand. And he grabs me, like actually physically grabs me, and he picks me up. Not, I mean, not picks me up, but, you know, pulls me up off my toes, and he's yelling at me, and I am traumatized. He chucks me on the ground, you know, grabs his daughter's hand and walks away like nothing ever happened. And one of our Hungarian friends saw the whole thing happen, and he runs over and he's checking me out, making sure I'm okay. And I was fine. I was just, you know, shocked. But he explained to me, I was wearing a Grateful Dead t-shirt, and dude could tell that I was an American and thought that I was going to try to hurt his children because that's what Americans do. So that was a real profound moment in my life.
Yeah.
And I started taking Russian in high school after that, because I was concerned about how people come to know each other across cultures. And so then I went to Mary Washington. I got my undergrad degrees in political science and international affairs. And I planned to have a career in like international diplomacy, that kind of thing. But I didn't really dig it. And so I went and got a master's degree at George Mason University in there. It was called the Institute for Conflict Analysis and Resolution. It's not called that anymore. Now it's the Carter School for Conflict Studies. But I got a master's degree in a master's of science in conflict resolution. And in that program, I started thinking about how not just how we conflict with one another, which is interesting in and of itself, but how communication plays a role in those conflicts. And the most sort of formative research project I did while I was working on that was one where I looked at the communicative styles of George W. Bush and Saddam Hussein, who were getting ready to go to war with one another. No, it was George H.W. Bush. And they didn't communicate directly with one another, but they communicated through media, through newspaper accounts and radio accounts and television and stuff like that. And they both had very, very different communication styles, which seemed to prevent them from really developing any sort of understanding for what the other one wanted or needed out of a conflict. So I finished my master's, and then I decided to go get a doctorate in media, in journalism, in order to try to develop a better understanding for how communication plays a role in international conflict. And that's what I've been doing ever since.
That's a pretty good recap. What do you think, Peyton?
It's a lot. That was a lot to soak in. It's pretty interesting, though. It's like, I like the stories, the background. It's pretty cool. And it's like, it kind of gives detail of like kind of why, you know, what you do today to an extent.
So I think that a lot of people have formative experiences, and, you know, you may not realize it at the time, but, you know, these things that affect you. Yeah. So, you know, when I got here at the same time that Dr. Shannon got here. He's a history professor here. And he and I were hanging out in his office one day, just sort of talking, getting to know each other. And we both realized that 9/11 was a really important intellectual experience for us as well, right? That was a real, in terms of conflict for me, I mean, that this group of people could feel so badly about the United States that they would do that, right? Was a real profound moment for me. And it was for Dr. Shannon as well. And so we started talking about that, and we were like, I bet there are other liberal arts professors who also have had similar kind of intellectual experiences. And so we pitched it to the college. We hosted a conference called 9/11 in the Academy. We invited a bunch of folks to come from all over the world to deliver papers and to engage with us in conversation about how their sort of intellectual journeys and their disciplines were changed because of 9/11. And then we wrote a book about it. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I have a weird question.
Sure.
Do you think the trajectory of your career would have been changed if that man had not thrown you to the ground?
You know, it's an interesting question.
Yeah.
That was my second trip abroad. So when I was 13, I was involved in a study abroad trip for Soviet kids. They came to visit us We toured them around. We went to Roanoke, Charlotte, and Charlottesville, and it was like 15 American kids and 15 Soviet kids. And then the next year I went to the Soviet Union. And then the year after that was when I went to Hungary and Czechoslovakia. So I think that I was probably on the path already.
Yeah.
But it really did isolate for me something that I was chewing on already about how, I mean, I was literally there in order to promote intercultural understanding between our countries. And this dude thought I was going to hurt his kids.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it really isolated for me what kind of state of the world we're in these days. Or this was a long time ago. I guess it wasn't these days. Days, which maybe we would say has only gotten worse.
Yeah, I was about to ask, you know, do you think that has it gotten worse since then, or if it's gotten better, or if it's at the same level playing field as it was?
Like, I don't know how to answer that question. In some ways, things have gotten much better, right? I mean, many of us are much more willing to consider people's individualities and subjectivities in ways that, you know, we didn't even think about back in the 90s. We see media representations of differences that we didn't think about in the 1990s. On the other hand, there are also lots of people who are not at all interested in thinking about people's subjectivities and differences, and who are sort of angry and militant about having to do so. So there's a bit of a balancing act going on in that regard. I think the other thing, that plays a role, of course, is social media and the fact that we can all say whatever comes to mind now, right? And how easy it is to find your group of crazy, no, your group of your interest group.
Yeah.
And in some cases, your group of crazy.
Yeah.
That's not the right word. Crazy is not the word. Your group of, I don't know, whatever it is that it is. Right. Yeah. And in some cases, I think that that's super negative. So that's real problematic as well.
Yeah. So we've learned about this journey up until you got here. And so one thing I'm interested now is your experience being a professor here, and what separates Emory and Henry from some other institutions you've either attended or worked at? Let me lead you into this way. I chose Emory and Henry because, especially the media program, because every other college I applied to wanted me to choose either radio or television or journalism. And when I met with Dr. Lauder, she's like, that's stupid. Like, you need to learn all of it. Is that what attracted you here?
I mean, I don't think that's stupid.
Okay.
I don't think that's the way that I want to do it. Right. Yeah, I mean, there's good reasons, right? And there are certainly some people for whom going into print or TV or radio or, you know, whole hog is going to be the way to do it.
Yeah.
I think that for most of us, that's not the case. And I think that for a lot of media professionals, increasingly today, you know, being a, what do they call it? Like a three sport player or whatever, being able to do all the things is increasingly important. Okay. So the two reasons that I'm here and you know, I guess the big reason why I'm here is because I was looking to leave the institution where I was in Colorado, and my parents live in Roanoke, and we wanted to be close to family. So that's, you know, what brought us to Emory, right? Yeah, check. But in terms of the institution itself, the two things are, and I'm hesitating because I feel like it's maybe not the same way it is today as it was when I got here.
Okay.
But I also hope that we can get us back to that somehow, is the emphasis on the liberal arts. I think that the liberal arts is very important and underemphasized in today's economy and culture. And when I got here, at least, Emory and Henry's, you know, liberal arts programming, right? The core courses, all of that stuff was super robust. The Lyceum program was robust. Students, y'all didn't just do these core courses because you had to. You understood the value of those programs, and we emphasized the values of those programs, and we provided you with programs that were very, very robust and engaging and which enabled you to sort of feel, to understand why that stuff's important. And, you know, we still do that today, but I think that we could do it better. We were like version three of the liberal arts program since I got here. And I feel like, you know, version one was the best of them from my point of view. It was also the hardest and most expensive for us to implement,
yeah,
which is probably why it changed. But, you know, I feel like that was a very robust program, and I was real proud to join it. The other thing is study abroad.
Yeah.
I don't think that there's anything. I mean, I said a minute ago, my life was changed through study abroad or through traveling, yeah, international travel. And I think that every student should travel internationally. And I think that college, if you haven't traveled internationally already, college is an excellent time to do that. You will, you know, once you graduate, life becomes much more complex and traveling is much more expensive once you graduate.
Yeah.
Putting all that together, finding time off of work, right? I mean, finding 2 weeks where you don't, not only do you not have to work, but where you can like not hang out with your family or not hang out with your partner's family or,
yeah,
you know, that's super hard to do. So college provides an opportunity to study abroad that I really hope everybody takes advantage of, because there's nothing more profound. I mean, Meg went with us to Cuba this summer. I mean, that was an incredible trip.
Yeah.
We learn so much about ourselves through sort of comparative self-reflection and our willingness to be the fish out of water is something that you can't get just traveling in the U.S. And there, you know, there are good reasons to travel in the U.S. There's, yeah, lots of cool stuff to see, and there are lots of different cultural experiences in the U.S., but there's also a lot of shared experience in the U.S. that you just don't get when you go someplace that, you know, where English isn't the primary language, where capitalism isn't the economic model, where democracy is not the, or American democracy, whatever, is not the dominant political model. There's a lot to learn from that about ourselves and who we are. And I think that's great. So I think those are the two. I mean, and of course, the media and communications program at Emory and Henry College is top notch, and everybody ought to be a major.
Yeah. I think I beat you guys because I'm the only media major in the room.
Tried to get Meg.
I did too. I did too. At least a VizCom minor. Like,
right?
Sprinkle a little something in there. You've got time and you're smart. We can figure it out. Dr. Finney, I came out of high school and then I was sitting in your classroom, I think is really, uh-huh, how this worked. 101 Media and Society.
Yeah.
Is that a course that you like to teach? What?
Yeah, it's one of my two favorite courses to teach.
That media law?
Yeah, that media law.
Give me some bonus points and I'm in media law because I guessed that right. But please.
Media law is great.
I'm excited.
I mean, the law is, if I had to go back and do it all over again, yeah, I might have been a lawyer or a law professor or, yeah, a judge.
Why?
I mean, I think that in this country, at least, there's nothing more fundamental than the application of our rights.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's a lot of, I think maybe law professor is probably, okay, okay, you know, or judge. I think that the ethical application of the law is really important and something that gets, you know, so much in American life gets boiled down to competition, right? You know, we use sports and war as a metaphor for so many things in our lives, but that competitive sense is not the only way that we can get along with one another or get, you know, get around with one another. But it also drives us to think about conflict in particular ways. And so when I'm in a battle of rights, or when I'm in a, you know, a situation where rights or responsibilities or wants or needs are in conflict with one another, there are a lot of different ways that I can handle that situation. And I think that the law tends to be the way that a lot of those disputes get worked out. And as I was saying earlier, I think that a lot of those things get worked out in ways that are not necessarily ethical or in correspondence with our, you know, foundational documents these days. It just, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think the law is super interesting. I think the application of law is interesting, and the way that we exist today in correspondence with these laws that we have created for ourselves is interesting.
Yeah. I don't know where I went wrong in life, but a lot of my friends are pre-law or in law school. I'm looking at Meg right now. You're not in law school, but one of my favorite quotes.
Are you going to go to law school? All right.
One of my favorite quotes is that, you know, I don't know what we were talking about. And I had a friend say to me, Ryan, you know, it's called the justice system, not the fairness system. Have you heard that before?
No, but yeah. I feel that.
Yeah, no, I forget.
It's also not the feeling system.
Yes, that is very true as well.
Right. But what is justice? Right.
Yeah. I think a lot of people would say eye for an eye. I think when I talk about justice in classes, that's like their go-to, but
I don't think of that as justice.
I don't either. You have to consider equity, I think.
That's retributive justice, isn't it? Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But there are lots of other, I mean, there's restorative justice, there's
social justice,
yeah. Absolutely, right? I think that there are lots of ways that we can think about justice. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we take the word justice, just, right? What is just? What does that mean? Mm-hmm. To me, just is a synonym for right.
Yeah.
Right. So what is, so then we're talking about morals and ethics.
Cool.
And that gets more complicated. I think the thing about living in America today is that we are so complex and diverse that on one hand it becomes very difficult to apply a standard set of morals.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you want to say, okay, well, I believe in Christianity, and so I'm going to apply that set of morals. Well, that's super, but not everyone agrees, right? And I don't mean like not everyone agrees, like, you know, 2-5%. I'm talking about a substantial portion of our population subscribes to different moral or ethical values than that. So how do we then exist with one another in a world where our sense of self, our sense of worth and just and value are so diverse? The law provides us with a framework for doing that, but only if we apply it ethically or structurally.
Yeah.
Mm. Kind of gets to a point where it's like a jumbled up mess to an extent.
Yeah.
If you think about it, like when it comes down to it, and who knows, like I always think of like, well, is it getting worse or is it just staying level, or, you know, is it?
I mean, I don't know who is it. One of you, Meg, should know the answer to this question. Who was it that was like, you know, democracy is the worst political system except for all the others? Who said that? Was that like de Tocqueville or Thomas Jefferson or something? I'm not sure.
Come on, Meg.
But the idea, you know, it is a jumbled mess, right? Yeah. But that's one of the reasons why distributive democracy, democratic system ought to work better than others, because it ought to enable us to govern ourselves through proportionality and through, you know, representation. It doesn't always work that way, though. But I would argue in part that's at least because of our unethical manipulation of the democratic structures that prevent real democracy or democratic republicanism, I guess, from being enacted, like gerrymandering, you know, things like this that prevent people from exercising their right to vote. That just undermines democracy. It just makes it less valuable.
Yeah. Take a look at the House right now.
Yeah. Look at the House right now.
We're still without a speaker.
No, yeah. And did you see the dude that they nominated today has already
failed the vote, or said he didn't want to do it?
He didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't going to get them votes.
You're interested in law. Did you see the loophole that they found of that in the Constitution, it does not say that the speaker must come from the House of Representatives?
Oh, sure.
I think it's very interesting. Now, they're not going to put somebody in there who's not a member, I don't think. But
they could.
It could be you,
Dr. It could be me.
It could be you.
Yeah, that'd be a terrible
Do you think
you'd
pass the vote?
No, I would almost certainly not.
Okay. I don't think I would either. So just to make sure I'm on the same page there. But, wow. Oh my gosh, this is such an interesting conversation.
Are any of y'all going to ever run for office, do you think?
We're all looking at Meg.
We're all
right
looking
now.
At Meg.
You might.
Do you know I was on town council in Glade Spring? I served a term as town council. I was a write-in candidate.
Oh, wow.
And I served a term as town council.
I love a good write-in candidate.
It was a lot of work.
Yeah.
And really thankless work. It's tough.
Mm. Public service.
Yeah. Public service is not glamorous.
Yeah.
Right?
No, Meg and I are very involved in student government, and it's the same here.
Yeah.
We've gotten a lot of experience in bill writing and Robert's Rules of Order.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yep.
Yeah. It's It's a lot of fun.
I think though that, you know, to that point,
yeah.
I think one of the things that social media has changed for us is our calculation of success. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were talking about how it's thankless work.
Yeah.
I mean, do we need to be thanked for all the things that we do, right? Do we need somebody to pat us on the back and like our thing that says, hey, you did a thing? No, we want to. And I think this goes back to the liberal arts.
Yeah.
Is that we want to train people to be responsible, ethical adults who do things for their intrinsic value mm-hmm. and for their sense of right. And that's a tougher argument to make in our social media world because, you know, we're so glued to these platforms that tell us our value on the basis of how many likes and hearts and shit that we get.
You're good. Sorry. I think one thing we don't hit on enough is at the core of liberal arts is accepting that it's not about you.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. I go to bed thinking of that every night, you know, like, especially in my work in civic innovation that's pretty much all that we do. I mean, I had a class where we worked in a prison, and then right now I go to a kindergarten classroom twice a week. So you kind of get both sides and have to accept that, you're not going to get a thank you card every time.
No.
And if that is your goal, then maybe you need to choose something else.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I mean, except that there are lots of opportunities for you to fulfill that need to get that recognition.
Yeah. Dr. Finney, there's one question I like to ask everyone that sits in this room, either on Zoom or with us today.
Okay.
Is there a moment in your line of work that you have, that it all came together or that you thought this is what I'm supposed to be doing?
Yes.
Yeah. Can you talk about it?
You know, so speaking of social media,
yeah,
this is not the answer to the question, but it is an answer to the question. The other day, Facebook reminded me of a post that I had written about a media law exam that I had just written.
Okay.
And I wrote a really perfectly formulated media law question,
mm-hmm.
right? It was a really, really good question.
Okay.
And I wrote on Facebook how pleased I was with myself for having written this question that would elicit the information that I wanted, require that students answer it with thoughtfulness and scholarship. And also the fact that none of them would ever recognize that this was a really good question.
Yeah.
So I don't think that that's an answer to your question, or the answer to your question, because I think that if I put my mind to it, I can come up with lots of moments where I feel like I'm doing that thing. I mean, just thinking about the trip to Cuba this summer, there are 10 days worth of moments where I was like, this is exactly it.
Yeah. No, right. And that's partially what I like to ask that question too, is what comes to your brain, you know, like the first thing, you know, and that tells you a lot about who we're interviewing. I think
that I write exam questions.
No.
I think a lot about, I just threw out an exam in 101.
Oh, wow.
I gave an exam. So I used to teach 101 without any exams.
That's how I took it.
Because I believe, and I think that this is still the case, that assessment is better, that in a lot of courses, and that one in particular, that it's more effective to assess students through writing.
Yeah.
To get them to do critical analysis, et cetera. But I have this, you know, we have this new world of AI where a student can write my prompt into a ChatGPT and come up with an answer that is virtually indistinguishable from a real answer.
Yeah.
And I don't have a good way to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
So this semester I implemented exams in 101. And these were, you know, these multiple guess exams. And I gave the first one and the students didn't do great. I gave the second one and the students did not great. But right before the exam, they were complaining about it. And one of them was like, you've got like 600 pages of material on this exam. In these 50 questions are 600 pages worth of material. And I realized in that moment that they were right. And that it was a bad exam, right?
Okay, yeah.
So I gave the exam. I mean, it was
yeah.
like 1 minute to class time when I learn this. And then I went back to my office and I assessed the exam and they all did badly.
Yeah.
And then the next day in class, I brought them all in and I chucked them in the trash and we had a conversation about what it is to take a course, what learning is, right? What assessment is, how we figure out what students ought to learn in a course, how we then assess whether or the extent to which they have learned the stuff that they're supposed to have learned. So now we're doing something different in that class. But I mean, assessment is super important. It's like, you know, on one end, I think that we train students to be terrified about assessment.
Yeah.
Especially exams.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, it's really the most important thing because it provides students, ought to provide students with an opportunity to demonstrate that they have learned a thing. So in a liberal arts curriculum in particular, in a college curriculum where students ought to be motivated and engaged. I'm not looking at you, Meg. I'm just clearing my throat. Huh? You feel dark. Sorry.
It is a small room.
You know, that's an opportunity to say, hey,
yeah,
I didn't just come here and dink on my phone or whatever, right? We listened and we did projects and we learned some stuff. And so that's the way that I want to get an assessment, but that's super hard.
I think you sort of answered my last question with that story.
Oh,
I got two answers to one question. It's never happened. But it also circles back to that how we started this conversation with the liberal arts approach and you throwing those exams away and sort of zooming out and being like, what does it mean to take a course?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It hurt me a little bit to throw those exams out.
Yeah.
It hurt me more to realize that I had given a lousy exam, though.
Yeah.
Right. That's the last thing you want. That's the last thing I want, at least. Right. Yeah. I want to give students opportunities that they can show themselves as well as me that they've learned a thing. And that was not what I was doing.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, Dr. Finney, thank you so much for meeting with us today.
Yeah. Happy to.
Yeah. Hopefully we can have you on again, maybe a little later.
Sure.
And talk a little bit more about some things.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thank you.
Later on.
Studio B is part of the Emory and Henry College Bonner Scholar Program through the Appalachian Center for Civic Life. Studio B is produced by Meg Askew and edited by Ryan Vaughn. To listen to past episodes, go to anchor.fm/EHStudioB or wherever you listen to podcasts.